Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Paul Millard, and in this conversation, we spoke about the creator economy, Paul's story, and why he went away from the default path, and how he has personally dealt with difficult situations. I enjoyed this conversation tremendously. I hope you do as well, and if you have any thoughts or feedback about this episode, let me know on Twitter, at HeyDannyMiranda. But until then, this is my conversation with Paul Millard.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Paul, thank you for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Awesome. Looking forward to diving into it, Danny.
Yeah, diving into your story here and diving into who you are as a human being. You're a fascinating character, my friend, because in the West, you rarely see someone say, I'm going to not opt into this program, this thing that I've been brought up into. So what happened? Why did you decide to leave the United States?
Yeah, so there's probably a couple threads there. I think one is kind of leaving the default path. And by default path, I mean kind of following a steady career. And if you get the opportunity to be on a really good path that can make a lot of money, like never leave that. That's even crazier to leave. And I think leaving that path led me abroad in a roundabout way and in a way I didn't expect. And I think that's what's fascinated me. I've been off the, full-time employment track for 4 years now. And a lot of things I've discovered have been unexpected. And I've been writing about that, exploring it in my own life and trying to figure out what it all means. Because I think for many people, probably you, probably many other people doing their own things are discovering that there aren't really paths to follow for what many people are doing. And that can be disorienting, frustrating, and just almost impossible to navigate for so many people.
So take me through that. Take me through that decision. Was it a single decision? Was it a level of decisions? What happened? Where was there a breaking point you could take us to?
Yeah, so I grew up pretty like middle class American, I think. I didn't grow up with like pressure to go to good schools or needing to be kind of a world leader or anything. But I was always good in school and I liked it for the most part, and then did good in school, and then I went to UConn, got into the honors program there, and I think while there I got exposed to other very driven people. I went to school with valedictorians, people that got 1600 in their SATs, and I think I started to learn to desire what they desired, which was prestige, and I got really sucked into that path for probably 7-8 years, and really just constantly chasing the next thing, the next job. I wanted to break into consulting. Then I wanted to get paid more. Then I wanted to get an MBA. Then I wanted to prove that I wasn't a job hopper and I could climb the partner track, right? And I think along the way, I never really paid attention to, okay, do I want any of this? What am I good at? Where am I headed? Why am I doing this? And I think over time, through some different experiences, I started asking those questions. And it was probably a slow bubbling up process of 4 or 5 years in which I asked those questions. I started doing experiments. And then when I actually left, I've been writing about this. It wasn't like a bold leap. It was kind of like the last step left, right?
So you mentioned those experiments. What experiments were you making?
So first one was in 2014. I had recovered from a health crisis I had faced. I went through a battle with Lyme disease, and it was pretty rough. And I think the recovery took a while. But after that, I kind of had this like energy that was not being met by my day job. And I just had this like extra energy. And I think I was looking for somewhere to put it. I was at this networking event with this woman who I met who was a career coach. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like I've been helping people with careers and I love like helping people get jobs. And I've been doing that for years. How do you do that? And she's like, well, you just get started. She's like, it sounds like you're already a career coach. Like, why don't you give that a go or at least experiment with it? So I was like, oh man, I just got called out. But it was really, it was a really good wake up call. I think it was like, are you just going to talk about stuff you want to do or actually try stuff? So that led me down a road of starting to write on the internet, starting on Quora, then my own site, launching this venture I called Careers with Paul. It was very much a side gig, but experimenting with coaching. And then I don't know what kept me going, but I had this sense that I needed to keep doing experiments. There was more to learn. And I think the thing that's always driven me is that I just am super hungry to keep learning. And yeah, that kind of led me down a path of doing all these different experiments while still employed, but helped me build the confidence of thinking, okay, maybe there are different paths possible for me.
And so at what point do you start doing the curiosity conversations?
That was, well, I'm trying to remember. I think, so I had started writing on like LinkedIn and Quora. This is like 2014, 2015. And the craziest thing, people started reaching out to me and saying, hey, do you want to meet up and talk about this thing you wrote about? I think it's really interesting. And I was meeting amazing people that were interested in similar things I was. And it was kind of mind blowing. I'm sure you've had similar experience, but it kind of told me, oh, I need to kind of own this and send out these bat signals into the world and say, hey, come chat with me. I'm looking for other curious humans. I think now it's so easy to do this, right? I think with Twitter and so many other social channels now, it's very natural to do this, but it was not something like I graduated into in 2007. It was really a new way of seeing the world, and it was exciting. And then I read Brian Grazer's book, and he talked about using this approach throughout his career. So I just decided to put it up on my site when I started being self-employed, I think 2017. And I've always just let people book calls. I think I've had over 200 at this point. And it's just like, hey, let's chat about anything. No agenda. Let's see what happens.
What have you learned from all those 200 plus conversations?
So a lot of people reach out. Well, two things. I think one is if you write and share what you're excited about, you'll attract people excited about the same, which is amazing. Literally just makes your life better. And then you can meet these people in real life, work on things together, become friends with them. And for me, that's ultimately the goal, is to like make friends with people that make my life better. And two is there are a lot of people struggling with their relationship with work. And I've really been exploring this. I've been writing about this for 3 or 4 years, and I feel like I'm really still struggling to articulate what's going on, why everything feels so off about our relationship to work, where we're headed. But people reach out to me and it's kind of like permission for them to speak about something that's so hard to talk about in our cultures. I think this is global too, which is like they don't like where they're at, but they can't articulate it in a way that makes sense because we tie so much of our self-worth and identity and status into these jobs or work we do. And people really just have no idea how to think about that or where where to go, what to do about it.
Why do you think you have such a hard time actually verbalizing it or writing down what is going on with work?
Because I think it gets to what it means to be human. It's really about who we are in the world, right? It's our identity. I think job, no job, however you define work, we're all kind of drawn to do stuff, right? Every society, every culture is very suspicious of the non-doer, right? And by non-doer, I mean just somebody who's actively leaning against, like contributing or helping out, right? And over time, these jobs, the way we think about work, have become more and more around what you can get paid for. And this means a formal employment system, labor economies, and we've kind of narrowed what it means to work and contribute. And increasingly, a lot of that work is nonsense or bullshit jobs. And we're kind of stuck, right? We're tying this, oh, I want to be a good person, to all this kind of just crazy work that we'd rather not be doing or we're not really sure matters. And it can be confusing because of all these things, right? And it's what it means to be human, what it means to be part of a community, what it means to be connected to other people. And I mean, also deeper stuff like shame. We're afraid to say, I want to escape this path, right? I've faced this bizarre thing where people are like, don't you think it's selfish for you to leave your job and go live however you want to live? Like, leaving a high paid job is some sort of like immoral thing. That's crazy. That doesn't make any sense.
I think, you know, you mentioned bullshit jobs. I think that never before has human beings been aware of all the world's problems and all the ways in which humans are operating. And this is the first time in human history where you can know what exactly is happening across the world at a certain specific time. And so it makes what you're doing on the day-to-day feel somewhat meaningless. Do you think that all of the world's problems affected your decision to leave your job?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I think it's more like I'm making PowerPoint slides for grown men who are really insecure about what other grown men think of them. And I didn't really think it had that much impact on the world.
Yeah. And so,
and I think that gnawed at me. And I think I also probably had these latent creative urges. I think now I've recognized that as enjoying writing and enjoying creating things online and screwing around the internet and teaching people and helping people and mentoring people. But yeah, I don't think it was the tension. I was never caught up in this idea that like you have to have an impact in the world. Most people, when they're talking about that, they're talking about impact on a spreadsheet that they can work at a large organization and calculate that they've impacted a lot of people. I'm more interested in like one-on-one impact. I want to help individuals.
Mm. You know, from speaking to you and doing research and hearing you speak before, I really get a sense of calmness and at peace. I don't know if that's accurate, but if that is, how different is that from where you were 7 years ago?
Yeah, I've always been calm and pretty happy and pretty low anxiety. But I think on my previous path, there was definitely this like tension there that was there all the time. And I kind of always knew it was there. And I was kind of scared to go deep and find out what it is. And eventually I had to kind of go explore it. So I think the calmness I can reach now is a lot more real to like who I am than it was maybe 10 years ago. I was kind of like surface level at ease, but there were these deeper tensions or disconnects. And I think they got worse over time. I think in my last job, it was really disconnected where I was starting to get really wrapped up in like, how do I get promoted? How do I get a raise? How do I develop a career path? These consultants at other firms are making X amount. I should be making this. And I was like, I really had to step back and say like, who the hell am I being? Like, I haven't made that much. I haven't made what I made in that last job in 4 years. And like, I really don't care about that stuff. And it took like stepping away for me to rebalance and realign with what I claim to care about.
That's fascinating. So one thing I want to talk about is how you had to likely let go of that identity as this worker in order to live your life in Asia. What was that experience like?
I think we all have a little bit of worker in us, right? I think there was definitely a mourning, like a sadness of leaving a part of me behind. I think when you embark on a new path, you kind of sense there's something worth aiming towards and heading towards. But at the same time, it's scary because you know if you follow that impulse that you're going to change. And there's like a sadness there. I think it takes a while just to process that and move through it. But yeah, it's really just been a slow process. And I think I still drop into worker mode, right? When I start, like, we're moving back to the US eventually, and I start like freaking out about like, okay, I need more money. The US is so expensive. The healthcare is going to bankrupt me. How do I build stuff? But it's way less than it used to be. I'd say 95% of my days, I can kind of wake up and go do what I want most days. And I'd say most of the work I do, I don't resent any of it. So when I think of like the worker, I think of resenting my time. I really felt hostage a lot in my previous path, whereas like I feel like I'm opting into most of what I do now.
Yeah, that's good. And how do you base your identity today?
I don't know. I think it's hard, right? There is value to having an identity. One thing I notice is when you're on this path of like working good firms and a good salary, literally no one asks you why you're doing what you're doing. No one, right? It's just taken for granted that you're a good person. But now like people constantly are asking, why are you doing this? What are your plans? Don't you worry about retirement? Don't you worry about if you have kids? Don't you want a house one day? All these things, right? And of course you worry about them, but it kind of makes you defensive and also makes you want to like re-identify and cling to another identity. Cause then you can tell people, I am this, I am this person, I am a creator, I am a podcaster, I am a entrepreneur. And I've kind of tried to shy away from that. I'm not really drawn too much to like need to be any sort of identity right now. I think I'll like throw on practical identities and stories to like ease through conversations. If I sense like people need to know, like I'm a worker, like what people are asking is, are you a worker? What do you do? How much do you make? Where do you fit in the status hierarchy? So like
for maybe, I don't know if I agree with you there.
Well, because I mean, some people want to know that, right? Or they don't want to know like the deeper truth. So what I'm saying is I'll say, hey, I'm an entrepreneur and I run an online business. And then they're like, okay, cool. And then they'll move on. They're not too interested in the story. So it's more just like a story to like, they can fit me in a box. We can kind of agree that this this verbal exchange was done, then we can move on.
Yeah. Do you think that not, like, you're forming your identity by saying, like, I'm going to opt out of having an identity. Do you think you've made that your identity now?
Not really. I'm not, I kind of play with a lot of different identities. I think, yeah, I have like freelancer, vagabond, solopreneur, course creator, podcaster, I don't know, flaneur, the French, like, man of leisure, like a non-doing. I just kind of play with it. And it's fun. And every time I say something like that, it's a reminder. I also just use curious human a lot. And that kind of reframes it around like, oh yeah, okay. And I'm happy to identify with most of those things because most of those things I'm excited about.
So what are you curious about these days?
So probably learning Chinese. So I'm learning Chinese full-time right now. I'm in my final week of a 12-week class, doing like 5 days a week, 3 days, 3 hours a day. And it's been thrilling just to like deeply learn something, challenge myself, try to get better. And yeah, this is what I was doing before. I was doing my homework for class. It's really been cool. I mean, my wife speaks Chinese, grew up in Taiwan. So it's great to like, the more I learn, like more opens up to me and I can learn and talk more with her family and just people in Taiwan, which is a place I want to come back to and place I love. So really just opens up the world. Like it's so cool to like walk out on the street. Like everything's in Chinese characters. So I haven't been able to read stuff. And then like suddenly you're looking at street signs and you're like, oh my God, I now can understand and read. And that's pretty cool. So that's one thing I'm curious about. I think other things are like learning how to write better. I'm writing a book right now. Curious about just generally the creator economy, future of work, how people are going to carve their paths in the future of education, learning, all these things.
How has learning Chinese impacted your worldview?
I don't know. I don't know yet. Maybe it'll take a while for me to have a good answer to that. But I think living abroad has impacted my worldview a lot because it really softens your attachment to your default scripts. We all have these scripts where you grew up with and you actually don't realize, like you can be like, I don't really follow that. But like, you don't realize how strong they are until you show up in another country and you're there for a while. And then I think in my first few months in Taiwan, I was kind of wandering around and I had this voice in my head, like, what are you doing? You're a lazy bastard. You need to make money. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really fit here in Taiwan, right? That's not the script here. It's slightly different, but that's an American script. And it's like, oh, there's different ways of seeing the world. Then you go to like Thailand and like you can't really feel that script. Indonesia, other countries like that, Spain, Mexico, different places we've lived. It's all a bit different. And then you realize like, you just kind of soften your attachment to like life needs to be this way or that way.
Yeah. So if we were to reverse it, let's say you grew up in China or there's so many different countries you could choose from in Asia, which probably all have their own script, but maybe the one you're most familiar with, if you bring that person to the United States and they start wandering around, what script is going on in their head?
Probably their own script, right? I don't know though. I think that's something worth being curious about because it's something you could think about your entire life, but never really deeply know. I think I get a lens of it traveling to the US with my now wife. Mm-hmm. getting to see how she thinks about like my, like, it's really funny. You get to kind of observe your own family from a like Truman Show perspective because I'm seeing it through her eyes and I can tell some of these things are so crazy or ridiculous or weird. And I can kind of see both perspectives at the same time. And that's pretty cool.
What are some of the things that your wife sees that is like, she's saying to herself, that's so weird. How could Americans do it that way?
I think it's just like subtle language stuff. I think it's the script stuff, right? It's like, I mean, yeah, I don't, well, it's like, I mean, healthcare is one in the US. Like, it's taken for granted that healthcare is expensive and like you should worry about healthcare and probably stay employed just because the healthcare is so expensive and crazy. Well, there's universal healthcare here, really good access, and it's not expensive in Taiwan. So it's just like not something you worry about. So when people are like, don't you think you should get a job because of healthcare? It's like, well, that sounds insane to people from most countries in the world. But to an American, it's like, yeah, of course. That's the number one worry you should have for your adulthood.
Yeah. I think there's so many fascinating differences in the way that Americans and the rest of the world operates. And you've experienced some of those firsthand. So I'd love to know, like, what are some of the most surprising things you found from living abroad? Like things that you saw and you were like, or heard, or you're like, how, what is going on here?
I think just everyone creates their own challenges, right? Like you kind of create your own, we all have like a formula, which is like, if we do these things, then this is what I need to do to be a successful person, a happy person, a good person, whatever it is. Like, I mean, in Taipei, it's one of the most expensive housing markets in the world. If you look at it from like the price to rent ratio, it's number one in the world. And then you talk to people and like the wages have been really bad for 30 years and like people are actually still willing to work for like decades to afford a home because like that's just what people do. And like, I mean, you see similar things in the US, right? But it's like, for me, like I'm the weirdo. I step back and say like, okay, that's interesting. That's a game people are playing. How could I play that different? How could I hack the game? How could I rethink it, reimagine it? So I think that perspective is unique no matter where I go, but at least in the US, it's way more frustrating to me because it's like so familiar. Whereas like in other countries, I think I probably have more compassion and curiosity where I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what it's like to grow up here. I wonder what the pressures are. I wonder what people are thinking about, how people want to spend their time, what they're excited to do.
How could you bring that compassion and curiosity to the United States?
Well, I'm hoping to. We'll be back probably next year. And like, I think living abroad has enabled me to kind of soften some of the resentment I had towards these default scripts that I didn't love. I think they weren't a good fit for me. And I was angry at them and angry at people who thought that's the only way you should live. Right. And I think that's softened now by like living abroad and also just appreciating what a great country the US is too. And there's like pluses and minuses to everything. And so I think I've seen a wider range, of things. And yeah, I mean, I think like when I move back to the US, it's going to be a very different relationship to how I was thinking about a lot of things. I think I have a lot more optimism now. I think I have a lot more curiosity. I have a lot more, confidence in being able to find people like me. And also make work work for me, like make that balance and the type of work I want to.
What do you think are the major factors that contributed to that optimism and curiosity on your second go around the United States?
Well, I haven't officially moved back yet. I've only been back for, the longest was, I think, 5 weeks in the last 3 years. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of nervous about it, actually. I don't know how it'll be. I think it's weird to come back to your country after leaving for several years.
What's weird about it?
You just don't know how it'll go, right? I think when I left, I was burnt out, and I'm coming back with way more confidence in a path. I've met all sorts of people. I'm married now. I left single. I'm married now. I'm probably thinking about starting a family in the future. I think I worry about will I still be able to fit in, right? With like my family and my friends. I know I'll fit in. I know people still care about me, but I do worry about like being the weirdo that's not like doing what everyone else is doing. And will people challenge me, accept me? I don't know. Yeah, I think that's kind of what I worry about.
It's all fair, I guess, considering how much you've seen of the world. So you've seen a lot of the world and you've seen a lot of places. Where, and you talk about raising a family or starting a family potentially, where do you think is the best place in the world to raise a family?
I don't know. I think what I've learned is anywhere can be good, right? I mean, I have a lot of family with kids now, and I think the thing I've seen is like every kid's different, so you can't really plan. Also, if you become a parent, you can't really predict how you're going to be. So I think we've kind of been designing life to like live in different ways, live in a city, live in the country, live by the mountains, live by the beach, live somewhere for 2 weeks, live somewhere for 3 months, live inviting people to our place, going out and doing stuff, different environments. We've met a lot of people with kids while traveling and seen that like there are many different ways to live a life. And most people traveling with kids, they're commenting on like how resilient kids are. And it's actually much harder on the parents. So yeah, I don't think there's like a best place. I think you kind of do what makes sense for you then.
Why do you think it's harder on parents than it is on kids when traveling sometimes?
I don't know. I mean, reflect back to being a kid, right? Like, you're always down to go anywhere. You just pick up and go. Like, you don't have stuff. You don't have obligations, commitments, worries, anxieties, health. Can recover pretty quick when you're a kid. I've had all sorts of health issues in the past couple of years, and it's been stressful along the way, but it's also helped me realize that I can be pretty resilient anywhere too.
Yeah. What have you learned, speaking on that, on with the health issues?
I mean, I think you can get healthcare anywhere you are. So I'm a lot less worried about that than I was a few years ago. I think the most stressful place actually to get healthcare was the US, just because it was so expensive. I was dealing with like an exchange plan and like, yeah, it was just a nightmare to navigate the system. But I think Yeah, I don't know what the lesson is with health. I'd love to spin it into a nice lesson. I think I've dealt with a bunch of random health issues last year and then previously several years back. I think the lesson is like we can be pretty damn resilient. And the lesson for me is always like, I'm not going to compromise in my life because it's pretty damn fragile. I'm not going to compromise days, weeks, months, years for some future payoff on something. It kind of raises the urgency to like live now how I want to live and like have the courage to actually do that.
What advice would you give to someone who just got caught in the mix of a health scare that they had no idea was coming?
I don't know. It's hard. I think you have to find some method to make sense of what's happening to you and like try to find some sort of like optimism or hope. I think when you're facing health challenges, it's not so like the comparison I give is you might have a breakup, right, with someone and people will tell you, oh, you'll be fine in time. That's just true, right? That's wisdom. With health stuff, you actually don't know. Like you don't know if you'll be fine. And that can sink you into depression pretty quick. So you need to find some way to like kind of protect that courage or hope. Even if you're going to like lock down and kind of like power through for like a month or 2 months or just even a few days. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'd be the one giving a lot of advice. I think reach out to other people who have like dealt with health issues is probably the best because then they'll give you space to actually just be whiny and depressed and complain, and they can understand, and that can be very freeing.
How did you find courage and hope?
I don't know. I think I've always had it. I think I'm pretty competitive and I think we all do. It's really just making sure you don't let go of it. I think most people have it. It's just like having faith that it's there, right? It's also just releasing yourself because you don't know if you'll get better. You don't know how things will go. But I don't know how much of value I have to say on this stuff.
Fair enough. So I was going through your website and you said the following quote: "I'm a big fan of reading books with advice of people near the end of their life, or who have gone through hell and lived to tell the tale. Almost all of these books seem to have the same advice. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't get caught up in extrinsic goals. Love the people that matter. Don't put off bold risks and have fun." Thought that was so beautiful.
Yeah, and I kind of just want to do that now. And that's my bet. I think one of my favorite books is Tuesdays with Maury. And he just tells people this stuff, right? And he also says, like, you're not going to listen to me and you're going to realize he's too late. So the question I'm always asking myself is, like, what if I actually just followed that advice now? And I think it's a pretty good way to approach your life. The hardest thing will be that other people don't understand your motivations because they don't map onto how they see the world. But to me, that's how you know you're on the right path. If others can't understand or make sense of what you're doing, you're probably doing something that's true to what drives you.
Yeah, that's interesting because crazy people probably think the same thing, right? And I don't think you're crazy, but it's interesting because that sounds like something that a crazy person would say. Or think, rather.
Yeah, I mean, that is why people don't go on these paths because they're scared that they might end up like, I don't even know if crazy is the right word, but like, yeah, I mean, we have all these phrases like somebody lost their mind. Like, what are they thinking? Like something is broken up here. You don't want to be, I might be crazy, right? I think that's where you end up. Like, and I think that's the thing people don't see as well is, I mean, at least for me, there's a lot of humility with like the path I'm taking. I am willing to say I'm wrong. But the good thing about being on a self-employment path, a solo path, this like doing all sorts of different work and kind of just hacking a living is that it doesn't really matter what my beliefs are. Like if I can't make it work, my life's going to stop working. And I have to admit that. I think when you're on some, like the full-time employment is so weird because it kind of gives you this paycheck independent of what you do and believe. So you don't actually have to have beliefs that align with things that work. So you can be a bit disconnected on what you say works and what or what you believe in and what you actually do in your life.
And that's a level of crazy as well. Maybe even crazier.
Yeah, I think about this a lot though. I mean, is it, maybe it's smarter. Like I think it's sometimes that's a feature, right? Going back to my original point is like nobody questions you when you're doing what everyone else is doing. That can be really useful to like focus on other things in your life. I devoted an enormous amount of mental capacity to like figuring out, okay, where are we living next month? How am I going to think about work? How am I going to like design my life to like do these things? How do I connect with people? How do I like, it's an enormous amount of mental energy to orchestrate my life. And other people can focus on other things, right? And I mean, that's the thing with like kids. It might make sense to have something a little more stable or predictable.
So is that what you're thinking? A more stable existence?
I don't know. I mean, this passed pretty good for me. It seems unstable to other people, but I'm pretty comfortable in it. I also have a lot more confidence of like that I can keep it going. I'm pretty confident I can keep this going for another 3 to 4 years. And I'm sure in a few more years, I'll be confident that I could go another 10.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Is one of the reasons why you're confident the rise of the creator economy and creators as a whole just getting their shine, it seems like, in a sense, on the internet? Whereas you were doing some of these things talked about in the creator economy 4 years ago and no one was around you. Today, it's more widespread and accepted, quote unquote.
Yeah. I think there's definitely been more economic opportunity. I mean, last year, my YouTube channel teaching consulting skills randomly took off. And now I make $200 a month from like YouTube ads. To me, that's crazy. Like I didn't do anything to make that happen. Like I hadn't been adding videos. It just started going crazy one day. I think there's a lot more opportunity now. I think also when I left my job, even before my job, I was doing all those experiments, right? Like I worked as a career coach. I got paid to give a speech. I got paid to facilitate a workshop. I did a freelance consulting gig before I left. I've done all these different ways of working. Like now I've experimented with like doing online courses, doing online coaching, doing online consulting, freelance consulting, in-person training, online training, corporate workshops, cohort-based courses. So I think of it as like, it's almost like an athlete. Like I feel like I have like 10 moves now,
right? What's your favorite?
Writing on the internet. It's like the least lucrative, but it seems to lead to the most interesting and fun outcomes for my life. And that's the thing I've kind of designed my energy around. So I'm studying Chinese and writing right now. Those are my two focuses. I said at the beginning of the year, I'm going to focus on learning Chinese in the first half of the year and then write most days. And that was it. And then the other stuff kind of like fits in around that. And yeah, I mean, like the stuff that makes me money, like the consulting skills course, that has done really well, especially in the last 2 years. And I'm doing like corporate workshops for that right now. That's kind of a funding vehicle for the writing and the things I love doing, having conversations like this, helping people navigate these paths. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
It sounds like you were drawn to helping people with their careers way back when that career coach had made that observation. What do you think draws you to help people with careers?
Yeah, I think for me, it was like a puzzle. I think this like engineering mind is, I also just think like system wide. And I'm always like, okay, this piece, you do this, and then you do this, and you end up here. And that works really well for like how our economy and careers work. You can like hack how do you get a job in consulting, which is something I did. Right. And I think I looked around and like people hate that. So I'd be like, all right, let me help you. And I've always just really enjoyed helping people with this stuff. I get a kick out of it. And like seeing people actually get into a job where it's like so much better. Like I've helped friends go from like depressed to like, oh my God, life's so good now. And like, I'll do that every day of the week. I love it. But I think like now I'm really thought about this, but I think what's always driven me is that like, I really just believe in people. I think people can be amazing. Like, and I tend to see potential in people, and it kind of frustrates me that they don't see it. And I think helping people with their careers or jobs is really like, oh my God, you're amazing. Why don't you go after this? And yeah, I think it gets a little frustrating as you get older, because people kind of give up that drive that things could be better, or things could be improved, or you don't have to suffer. And people kind of settle into this learned helplessness. It kills me when I see that. But yeah, I think that's probably the underlying driver.
How can we help people believe in themselves more?
I don't know. I try to focus on the people that want help. I think one thing I've thought about a lot is just creating. I think so. The creator economy, right? The creator economy, that word phrase is basically a conception of investors. They're conceiving of the world as something that, okay, there are all these tools and it can outcome in money. They're looking at it as an investable space with money as an outcome. I look at it a little different, and it's why I'm so excited about it, which is, I mean, this is what Seth Godin says. We're basically democratizing the means of production to everyone and giving them free distribution, right? So we haven't really updated our mindsets to this. Most people, like if you ask anyone above, most people above 40, like, do you want to write a book? Oh, I can't write a book. I don't know how you would do that, right? They're thinking about, oh, you have to get a publisher. You have to get permission, right? And I mean, the way I'm thinking about it is like, why not? Like, just put it out there and see what happens. And I think being able to create, bring these parts alive in me has just like opened up this connection to like a deeper part of myself. And I think that possibility is enormous for people. I mean, I wrote this article calling for 100 more creators, 100x more creators. And what I'm talking about is like the retired person who has never painted before that can like take an online art class and share it with people. It's the middle manager who might want to start writing fiction. It's like the high schooler who wants to create a video or a documentary about something. It's somebody who wants to write satire or comic strips, or I don't know. I'm probably not even dreaming big enough in terms of like what can be created and stuff, but even just conversations, right? Audio conversations like this, you're super passionate about it and it comes through. And that's why it was like a no-brainer to do this. And it's very clear to me, like watching some videos of you doing this, that this is connecting with something in you that you can't explain.
100%.
And that to me is that's everything.
And I want to pull up a quote here from that article, which we'll link down below, but it's anyone who creates a podcast, writes on the internet, or shares other creations online over a long enough time, eventually figures out the secret. The benefit of a creative journey is the path itself. If you can find a creative journey you want to be on, then the opportunities that emerge will also be the ones you want to work on too. I mean, the idea that the benefits of the journey is the journey, is everything, is the path, is what is so amazing. That is something I wish more people internalized. Because when you think about the creator economy, how it's normally thought of, the creator economy for money, but you're saying the creator economy for the act of creation. And that is powerful.
Yeah. It's, if we need a new term, it's really like digital creator playground.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
But I say a lot, I think a lot of people see the outcomes of what people are doing. And it's not really that interesting to me. I'm looking at people that have been doing this for 20 years. And I'm looking for certain types of energy that are showing up. And then I'll dig into like, what are their principles? What are they thinking? Like, I think people like Austin Kleon, he speaks from a different planet when he talks about this stuff. Like, it wouldn't make sense if he was talking about like the creator economy. He's talking about something deeper. And this is where people get mixed up, right? They think they want what other people want, but what they don't realize is that other people don't know what they want either.
What a line.
And the what they really want is like, I think the whole goal is like find the work you want to keep doing. I'm not a big fan of like these paths where it's all about escaping work. Although I think I leaned into that a bit when I was first on my self-employment path. But it's really to find the things you want to keep doing.
Yeah. The things that if you won the lottery, you'd still be doing tomorrow. And I think that question, really meditating on that question, really helped me start this podcast and really help me find the thing that I really enjoy doing for the sake of doing. And I think that in today's day and age, it's so easy to say, okay, I want to sell my company so that I can relax on a beach. And that's great. But what do you enjoy doing for the sake of doing it? And that's the answer to what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I've been around people who are retired on a beach. And they're still drawn to do stuff. And I think basically what I'm trying to do is like transcend both those paths because there's no point in like, you can't just work hard and then stop and then flip a switch. You actually need to figure out like the mode of being you want to show up in the world or the modes along the way, such that you can kind of, I don't know if I'm articulating this well, but basically so you do have these different modes, right? I know I can stop. I've experimented with like 1 month off from like working multiple times. So I have that and I know what it feels like. And I think for me, what I've realized is like, I like the balance of different things. Like I like seasons. Right now I'm doing 3 months of Chinese. That's ending. Now I'm kind of in the early stages of like conceiving, okay, what does the next 3 months look like? I think it's mostly writing, but it's probably some other stuff that I can't predict yet.
How do you come across 3 months? Was that an arbitrary number or was it more intentional?
Well, right now with Chinese, it's just, that's how long the course is. So that's kind of how my mind was set up. But yeah, I think these things tend to go in seasons too. I think the weather makes a big difference based on where I am. I think depends like what other activities and interests there are outside of where I am at. I mean, it's very flexible. I think we're actually in like a lockdown now in Taiwan. They finally, like COVID broke through here. So you kind of adjust and like, okay, I'm going to do some more work because I'm going to be at home. I'm going to try these different things. And yeah, for me, it's really just staying agile and flexible along the way.
So how did your pathless path get impacted when COVID hit and the world was then brought into a different way of being? Was there a level of anxiety, increased anxiety? Were you more comfortable with what happened? How did you react to that?
So in 2017, when I first started, so like working on my own as a freelancer, that's what I did first. I made a decision I would just stop working in person. So I basically learned all these things about learning working online. So the working online was like a no-brainer. And then I think designing my day, like the only thing that was different, like we were in Spain, there was a hard lockdown. We couldn't go outside our apartment. But it still kind of felt like every other day. Yeah, I was very well prepared compared to most people, I would say.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I mentioned the Pathless Path just now. That's the name of your book. And so how was that process of writing the book? What was that like?
Well, it's not done yet.
It said due March 31st.
I know. I need to update that. Basically, I realized it was more complex than I expected. I'm actually a pretty quick writer, and I can like write out a 3,000 to 4,000 word blog post probably in a few days or a week. And I'm like, oh, I'll just do like 20 of those, combine some old stuff and it'll be good. But I think what I discovered in the process was one, that it's a little more complex, right? There's like another layer of complexity than just like 3 or 4 topics in one post. It's kind of like 50 different topics and then 3 to 5 themes and then an overall theme. So it's an extra layer. And then I think as I went into it, I realized I could write something. I could spend more time and write something that I'd be excited to finish. So I'm going for it. Like I'm trying to write something that's beyond my comfort zone. And it's been really fun. I've really pushed my writing to a new level. It's been like, it's fun. Like I really love writing. So yeah, it's a cool journey.
James Clear says, if you think you learn a lot reading a book, just try writing one. And I thought that's a great quote. But what particularly do you think is so fun about the process of writing or writing a book for you personally?
It's just hard. And like, I'll get stuck on like this thing I know I can write about. And I'm just like trying to jam words and it doesn't work. And the next day I show up and try again, or not working. And then all of a sudden, like one day, it just like, oh, I connect these ideas and it just flows. Right. And then also I worked with a writing coach a little bit early on and he really pushed me in a couple directions. I he taught me some writing moves I didn't really attempt before. So that really pushed me in a new direction and just getting better at stuff and enjoying the journey. That's what it's all about.
What writing moves?
I mean, if you've read my stuff, it tends to be like very analytical, very clear, direct. I'm pretty good at simplifying it. I am not good at bringing out the emotion or like the metaphors or like the vibrancy of stuff. His feedback to me was basically like, push it really hard and like, you'll never be too like cheesy because like your natural impulse is like this very analytical mode anyway.
That's interesting because I think sometimes we don't realize our own writing is, and did you realize that it was analytical to begin with?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, yeah, I kind of write like a technician. I think I'm in very, very much an engineer at heart. Very analytical. Yeah. And my wife makes fun of me because she can come up with these like amazing metaphors and like, she's just like a poet at heart and she can come up with it like just like that. And she can come up with way more interesting ways of framing what I'm saying than I can.
Well, that's good to have that balance.
Yeah, exactly.
But Paul, is there anything else you'd like to mention? Any topics you'd like to explore before we go to a close?
I don't know. This feels good. I don't want to ramble on too long.
Feel free to ramble whenever you want. This has been a great, great, informative, different perspective. And I'm grateful for this conversation. Where can people find more Paul in their life?
I mean, you can find me at think-boundless.com. That's a lot of my writing on the future of work. My stuff, my Substack is also boundless.substack.com. That's probably the best place to follow along, and on Twitter as well. But I mean, if you just search Paul Millard, I'm like the only internet presence, so pretty easy to find.
Paul Millard, the only internet presence. Thank
there's
you.
There's a Canadian Paul Millard, but I've outranked him in Google search.
We won't link to Paul Millard, the Canadian, because this Paul Millard is the number one in our hearts. Thank you, Paul, for your time. Really grateful for you.
Awesome.
Have a great one. Hello, beautiful people. If you listen to this point, first of all, thank you for doing so. And second of all, I would love to know what you found valuable about this episode. And you can let me know on Twitter at Hey Danny Miranda. And until then, I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.